Hey everybody, Brian McClanahan here. I've been talking about LearnTrue, T-R-U-E, history.com. You've heard about it several times in the introduction of this podcast. So get on out to LearnTrueHistory.com to get history the way it was intended to be told, with no PC, no Marxism, no progressivism. But not only that, I've got my new How Alexander Hamilton Screwed Up America, my forthcoming book. So I want you to go to LearnTrueHistory.com to sign up for that great program. But also, if you go to blamehamilton.com, you can get in on some giveaways for my forthcoming book. So two websites for you: learntruehistory.com and blamehamilton.com. Get in on both of those things. Learntruehistory.com is the place to go to learn history the way it was intended to be told. Blamehamilton.com is where you learn about how Alexander Hamilton was the greatest villain in American history. This is the Brian McClanahan Show. 3, 2, 1, 0. Welcome back to the Brian McClanahan Show. This is episode 91. Glad to have you back on the program. Glad to be here. Before we get started, just want to remind you, if you do like this podcast, please share it around social media with all of your friends and foes alike. Also, if you would like to follow me on Facebook, or I should say like me on Facebook, you can do that. Follow me on Twitter, like my YouTube page. You can just search for me under Brian McClanahan, and you'll come up with all of my social media accounts. Also, and that's Brian with an O. Also, you can go to my webpage, brianmcclanahan.com. And you can give me an email address, and I'll give you a couple of goodies. I'll give you a free ebook, Forgotten Founders, and also a free audiobook read by yours truly, Forgotten Founders, as well. So go on out there, give me those things. And if you do like the podcast and you want to help support the podcast, you can go to brianmcclanahan.com/support, and you can throw me a penny or whatever you think I'm worth, and help support the podcast, help keep the lights on, that kind of thing. So whatever you would like to contribute, I appreciate anything, any element of your generosity. Also, just want to remind you, and of course, I talked about it at the beginning of this podcast, if you are interested in getting my forthcoming How Alexander Hamilton Screwed Up America, this is the time to do it, because if you wait until after it comes out, the goodies will not be there. So if you go to blamehamilton.com and you click on the little button that says get your giveaways and enter the contest, it'll take you to the page, explains everything. You can get some goodies from me, an ebook, also a lecture, a 6-lecture course on Hamilton, and you'll be entered for a master prize, or a grand prize, I should say, which is a master level membership to libertyclassroom.com. So go on out there and do that. Get those things. Don't wait, because if you wait, those things will be gone after September 18th. So you got a little time, but time is still a ticking, so why wait? And also, you don't owe a dime at this point. You can pre-order the book. You don't have to pay anything until it comes out. You can save all your pennies and save up for it. And don't let that $30 price scare you. It's not going to be that when it comes out. So it's always cheaper on release day. So I'd appreciate if you do that and get those goodies and help out the cause of getting Hamilton named as a villain rather than a hero in American history. So speaking of that, I want to talk today about a book. I just did a book last time, last podcast, episode 90, dealing with the American War for Independence. Here we are a couple of days later. It's July 6th. And I want to talk about Larry Arnn's book, The Founder's Key. So those of you who don't know who Larry Arnn is, Larry Arnn is the president of Hillsdale College. You might have heard Larry Arnn on, if you listen to, mainstream talk radio here and there, they do a little thing for Hillsdale called the Constitution Minute, and Larry Arnn will come on and talk about the Constitution. And these are wonderful little pieces. They're great, and it's a great advertising method for Hillsdale College. And there are some very good professors at Hillsdale College. It is a great opportunity to go. I think Bob Murphy went to Hillsdale College, and so it is a great opportunity to go and learn from in an environment that's not going to be polluted with all the PC nonsense that takes place around most of your college campuses today. There are a few campuses out there like this. You know, Hillsdale's one, maybe Liberty University. There are some others. But for the most part, you're just going to have to kind of hold your nose if you go to a state university or any major university. If you're a libertarian or conservative, you're just going to have to hold your nose and tolerate it. I did. This is what you have to do. But Hillsdale is one of those little refuges out there. So they do these wonderful little things on the Constitution. Of course, they got the little free classes on the Constitution and American history. Of course, there's better stuff out there. Just go to LearnTrue, T-R-U-E, history.com, and you can get better stuff than that. But that said, Larry Arn, of course, is the president of that institution, and Larry Arn says a lot of right things. He's good when he talks about the abuse of power by the general government. Unfortunately, this little book, The Founder's Key, and then one of his major premises is just completely wrong. And of course, right now there's a little video out there on Hillsdale in one of their classes, and it's like a little seminar setting. They've got some students sitting with Larry Arn, and he's saying, there's questions. We have a lot of questions to answer about the Constitution. He has this very, soft voice. There's questions. A lot of questions. And the problem is, in the first part of it, he gets about three or four things wrong within the first 30 seconds of the video. One of the things he said, I've actually made this mistake before, so I can't say I'm not at fault here, but he says that the U.S. Constitution, or the Constitution for the United States, is the oldest written constitution in the world. It's not. The Constitution for the state of Massachusetts is. But that's splitting hairs there. But still, I think it's important to note that. And there's other things he gets wrong. And one of the things that the Founder's Key, and if you look at the subtitle of the book, he's setting this up for what exactly this is going to be about. The subtitle is The Divine and Natural Connection Between the Declaration and the Constitution, and What We Risk by Losing It. So there's between the Declaration and the Constitution. So what is this divine or natural connection? That is the key to understanding what Larry Arn is. Larry Arn is a Straussian. And if you don't know the Straussians, Leo Strauss is the guy they're named after, but the most famous Straussian when it came to this founding period was a guy named Harry Jaffa. And Jaffa believed that the whole key to understanding the American founding is understanding the second paragraph in the Declaration for Independence. And of course, they get this from Abraham Lincoln. And so Lincoln, in some of his speeches, but more importantly, the Gettysburg Address, when he starts connecting the idea in the second paragraph of the Declaration, where Jefferson says, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they're endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." So to people like Arn and Jaffa and other Straussians, that becomes the proposition by which the United States was founded. The proposition that all men are created equal. They're endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So that follows then into the Constitution. That idea, that core belief, that is what America is all about, and that's how you have to understand American government. And Larry Arn, in this particular book, for example, he discusses this quite openly. This is what he believes. And there's one particular chapter in the book where he gets into the South. And he bashes Southerners because Southerners do not believe in this proposition. And people like John C. Calhoun are the great villains in American society because John C. Calhoun was pro-slavery. Now, no one today would argue that slavery is a morally just institution or an economically feasible institution. No one really would really want to do it. Now, of course, I say no one. There are people out there. Of course, slavery still exists in the world, so I can't say no one would believe that slavery is right. But here in America, no one does. But however, by throwing Calhoun under the bus, Larry Arn is weakening his position when it comes to the power of the general government vis-a-vis the states, because Larry Arn will make great statements. Well, the general government's exceeding its powers. It's going beyond its delegated authority. When the founding generation said this, they intended that not to be expanded out this way. He does a wonderful job in explaining those things on his little Constitution minutes. And of course, anytime you've got somebody out there telling students, you know, the general government only has certain delegated powers and it can't go beyond those, you weaken your position by bashing John C. Calhoun. Because John C. Calhoun was one of the great proponents of federalism in America. And that's exactly what Larry Arnn wants to talk about. So these people are in some ways schizophrenic, the Jaffaites, the Straussians, those that believe that Abraham Lincoln somehow was the embodiment of the American founding period, that the Southerners were fighting something completely different for something completely different, and the Union was fighting for the principles outlined in the Declaration of Independence. That's because Lincoln said that, but it doesn't make it true at all. Now, of course, if you read people like James McClellan, who wrote James McPherson. I'm thinking of the Union general. James McPherson, who wrote the great book For Cause and Comrades, he'll tell you that Union soldiers did say they were fighting for the principles of the Declaration and the Union and these type of things. And so were Southerners. They were saying the exact same thing. So they're both saying they're fighting for the principles of the founding generation. And what Arnn and the other Jaffaites and Straussians have done is said, well, no. Lincoln had the stronger position, because if you look at American government, it's founded on this particular idea, this proposition that all men are created equal. Now, let's dive into that a little bit more. That, in so many ways, even according to Thomas Jefferson himself, was kind of a throwaway phrase. In fact, Jefferson said, well, I wasn't really articulating any type of new ideas here. I was just expressing the American mind at the time. And of course, Jefferson, when he said all men are created equal, he's talking about all citizens, and they were equal under the law. And those phrases, you know, life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, he lifted that from the Virginia Declaration of Rights, which was written by George Mason, where Mason said that all men are entitled to life, liberty, and property, which, of course, produces happiness. And then, of course, those particular words were lifted from John Locke and the principles that were articulated in two treatises on civil government. So, this idea that somehow that became a founding principle is completely alien to, if you look at the founding documents. In fact, I think Pauline Meyer was perfectly correct in American Scripture when she said that the Declaration was a defounding document. It was. As I said in the last podcast, the only part you can take from the Declaration that has anything to do with American government is the last paragraph, not this second paragraph, because that does nothing in outlining an American government. Jefferson is, of course, setting up the conditions by which you can alter or abolish your government if your government does not protect life, liberty, and property, which he says is the pursuit of happiness. You can alter or abolish that government, but until the last part of the Declaration, he has no claim on what American government will be. He's saying, well, you can have, and if you look at that in so many ways, weren't Southerners in 1861 saying that the government is going to abuse their life, liberty, or their property? Now, we can quibble with the fact that the property in this case would have been human beings. We can say, well, I mean, maybe that's not a good idea. But in some ways, they're saying that the general government isn't going to violate their liberty or their life. Heck, they're going to shoot at them. So when you look at what the South was doing in 1861, this is why they said they're following the same idea that the American colonists were following in 1776. It was all about independence. In fact, the British openly said that they believed the American colonists were fighting for slavery, as I've said on this podcast before. They were fighting for slavery in 1776. So which one was it? So Larry Arnn has produced this book that very much attaches the idea of the Declaration in that second paragraph with the Constitution. Now, another claim that the Jaffaites and those, the Straussians, will make is, of course, if you look at the preamble to the Constitution, it says that the Constitution is designed to protect liberty. Ensure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Okay. What does a preamble do, though? That's a question that has to be answered. What is the point of a preamble? A preamble is an introductory clause that means nothing except essentially establishing what the document below it will do. It cannot be held up in a court of law and saying, this is the powers of the general government. It can't do that. The preamble simply introduces the rest of the document. And so the rest of the document defines how they're going to ensure justice and domestic tranquility and provide the blessings of liberty to themselves and their posterity. That's what the rest of the document is going to do. So you can't really say that this second paragraph of the Declaration has some kind of merit in outlining what the Constitution will be by looking at the preamble to the Constitution. This is exactly what you have to do. It's the stretch you have to make. It's the conclusion you have to draw to put the two together. So it's a fairly sloppy reading of American history to put the two together like that. It's a fairly sloppy reading of American government, a fairly sloppy reading of the founding generation. Now, certainly, the founding generation did believe that governments had an obligation to protect life, liberty, and property. I don't think you would find many in that generation that would disagree with that particular statement. In fact, it was their lives and their liberty and their property that were being abused by the British in this constitutional war, this war over the meaning of the Constitution, as I just discussed in Podcast 90. So when that government does not protect, it unconstitutionally violates its charter, its defined powers, even by custom and precedent, and it does not protect your life, liberty, and property, then you have a right or a duty to alter or abolish that government. That's the part of the second paragraph that matters. And so when you look at the nature of American government, then what is the nature of American government? If it's not what Larry Arnn says it is, if it's not where we have a constitution that's designed based on the premise of the Declaration, the second paragraph, then what is American government? I mean, what are the principles of American government? Well, I think the main principle of American government, without a doubt, all throughout American history, is federalism. The idea of a federal union and defined powers for the governments, whether they be state, local, or central, because those defined powers have to be adhered to by the whatever level of government you're talking about. That is American liberty, and that's what it means. But individual communities could define that liberty for themselves. And so, again, when you look at American society in the 17th and 18th centuries, and you look at the culture, the political culture of these communities, they were all different. In New England, liberty was defined as a collective liberty, the liberty of the community over individual liberty. As long as the community was safe, well, then individual liberty could be subjected to the central to the government authority, and could be subverted. Individual liberty was not as important as the liberty of the community. Whereas if you went to, say, Quaker Pennsylvania, individual liberty was very important. However, there were restrictions on that within Quaker community itself. So the Quakers had their own little closed communities, and so that liberty could be abridged in those particular societies. But they were reciprocal libertarians, meaning that if they demanded freedom of speech, they would return that in kind. And then if you get to places like Celtic society on the frontier or Cavalier society in the South, their liberty was different as well. In Celtic society, it was a liberty of a strongly individualistic liberty and resistance to tyranny. I mean, this is how they thought about liberty, and they were armed resistance to tyranny. And then, of course, in Virginia, it was what you would call our Cavalier society in Virginia, the Carolinas. It was what you would call hegemonic liberty, meaning liberty for the ruling class, But that liberty for the ruling class would often filter down into the other people in Virginia as well. In fact, you can make an argument that even though Virginia was very undemocratic, it had some of the highest respect for liberty in the entire British North American colonies, because they understood what liberty meant. And they didn't want anyone telling them what to do or how to live their lives. That was important. So those are the principles of government. It's not some type of proposition outlined in the second paragraph of the Declaration. No, not at all. It's outlined in the idea that power is restrained, power is limited. And not only that, you have checks and balances. Now, that's an overused phrase. Well, we got checks and balances between the central government, between the three branches of government. We have to check some balances there. Yes, but there are also checks and balances between the center and the creating powers, which were the states, or the center, which was the parliament and the colonies. So that was an important key. That is the founder's key to understanding American government. That is what we are losing. And by trashing John C. Calhoun or the South, or this idea that somehow Lincoln, or by adhering to some idea that Lincoln was right in the Union, that's the wrong side. It's the wrong side of the situation. So you can even go back to the founding generation and look at this. The Nationalists were on the losing side in the great battle over political power in America, at least rhetorically. If you look at how Hamilton, for example, sold the Constitution in New York, in Poughkeepsie, or in the Federalist Essays, he sold it based on the idea that the state still had all the power. And even James Wilson, the great nationalist, he was a nationalist and he was one of the great expounders of nationalism. Not that he's a great person, because James Wilson is another one who was a great villain in America. Literally, a great villain. James Wilson sold the Constitution at the State House Yard Speech under the same idea. Well, we're only going to have the powers it says. We can do everything else is left to the states. That's not what he really wanted. That's not what Hamilton wanted. In fact, in the Poughkeepsie Convention, Alexander Hamilton was called to the carpet by John Lansing, and there was almost a duel about this. If you pre-order two books, I get into that in great detail in one of the lectures. And of course, it's in the book as well. It's one of those stories that nobody tells. But John Lansing called out Alexander Hamilton and said, "You are telling a lie about state powers." Abraham Lincoln in 1863 at the Gettysburg Address was telling a lie about the attachment to the Declaration and somehow the Union cause. It was a great lie that people still recite and regurgitate to this day. One of the most worthless speeches ever made, because it was a great lie. If we're looking for government of the people, by the people, and for the people, then we have to look at the democratically elected state conventions that were held in the South that voted in crushing majorities to secede from the Union. The same type of process that was used in the period ratifying the Constitution. The convention process was used over and over again. Basically, it was a convention process that created the Continental Congresses that essentially acted as the de facto central government for the United States during the war. It was in convention. These were delegates. John Adams called them ambassadors. So the key to understanding American government is this federalist perspective. Federalism, not the Federalist Party, but federalism meaning decentralization. And if you take apart some of the great proponents of that idea, which were Southerners more than anything else, then you start weakening your own position. Because if you're going to talk about limited central authority, Lincoln is not your guy, because Lincoln did not believe in limited central authority at all. And if you start saying America's a proposition nation, and we have to have the ability for the central government to protect life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, well, how do you define that pursuit of happiness? And you can't qualify it and say, well, yeah, that's true, but Jefferson meant it this way. Well, somebody else could mean it some other way, too. And you open the door to strong central government. You open the door to unconstitutional government. When you start saying federalism is not the founder's key, when you start saying it's some proposition, you create massive problems for your position rhetorically and legally. So, understanding the founder's key, if I had to say, what is the founder's key? It's something entirely different than what Larry Arnn is saying, the founder's key. And again, Larry Arnn does a wonderful job explaining some parts of the Constitution and what some things mean, and you know, the government needs to be limited and these type of things, and these little Constitution minutes, great. I applaud, I applaud Hillsdale College for doing what they do in that way and trying to get people educated about the Constitution. Unfortunately, they're educating them in the wrong way. They need to be educating them in the way that, look, the key to the Constitution and understanding the Constitution is that most people would not have ratified it. The states would not have ratified it if they thought the states were going to be emasculated. And the way they've been emasculated is from 1865 to the present. The Union destroyed the states in 1865. And by invoking Lincoln, you're essentially weakening your entire position that somehow the general government has to be limited. You're creating a situation where everything has to be a national, top-down solution to every problem in America. Because that's what happened after the war. Everybody started looking to the central authority because the states no longer could do these things because the states no longer had any power. Now, states' rights had a resurgence at certain parts in American history, even after the war. But the trend was always in the direction away from that. And that's what we have today. This is why I was just reading an article about Mike Pence. This is why Mike Pence can go to some factory in some state and sit there and say, "What do you think we should do about health care?" Everybody sitting around that table said, "Why in the heck are you even here? What is your constitutional role again? And where does it say in the Constitution the general government's going to handle health care at all?" That should be the response to Mike Pence. But the problem is everybody's so awestruck. The vice president's coming here, so we have this meeting, and we got to tell him. And Mike Pence will get out a legal pad, and he'll start writing things down. Yeah, this is what we're going to do. Where is the vice president doesn't even have a vote in the Senate. The vice president is the most worthless job ever created, as John Adams said. It is pointless. But the vice president's here, so we have to meet with the vice president and tell him what we think about education. Why? Don't you have something better to do? Like, you're manufacturing boxes. I think he was some... don't you have boxes to manufacture? You're going to take time to meet with the vice president? What for? This is the problem we have in America. And why, if you say things like the founder's key, is understanding this second paragraph, you're going to open the door to big, oppressive central government. Lincoln was the gateway drug. It was put in check. The Jeffersonian vision of federalism reigned supreme in political circles until 1861. Lincoln was the gateway. Now, of course, you had different times. You had Washington. You had Jackson. Now, Washington was fine except for Alexander Hamilton. You had Jackson, who was a nationalist in ways that opened the door to Lincoln. But Lincoln was the gateway drug to every bad president of the 20th century, beginning with Teddy Roosevelt and on down the line. So if you read Nine Presidents Who Screwed Up America, I talk about that. You know, Washington and Jackson definitely set a blueprint for Lincoln, but Lincoln took that blueprint and ran with it and made a cathedral out of it, and then, of course, everyone just followed Lincoln. So when you start championing Lincoln, you are creating all kinds of problems for yourself. And I think one of the reasons people do this is because they don't want to be called all kinds of bad names. Because, you know, Lincoln is considered to be one of the great presidents, the greatest president in American history. He freed the slaves. He was supposed to be this good guy, good, moral, self-righteous guy. Unfortunately, none of those things are true, as has been pointed out by people like Tom DeLorenzo and Lerone Bennett and others, even yours truly. Lincoln was doing all kinds of things that were constitutionally dubious and downright wrong. And, of course, Lincoln was none of those things that people have portrayed him as being. He was just as racist as any other American at the time. And to classify Lincoln as this all-knowing, all-benevolent, president who's just out there for the best of things and just trying to attach that declaration, this is one of the great myths of American history and why books like The Founder's Key are so dangerous, because people will read it and think, oh yeah, there we go. The South is bad, Union good. The Union, though, is where everything changes, and it creates all kinds of problems for American government in the future. I think when I was an undergraduate, I realized that. You know, it's very easy to like Lincoln. It's very easy to think Lincoln is, because you're told your whole life, Lincoln's great. It's very easy to fall into that trap, and when you actually start reading things, you think, well, wait a second here, but if Lincoln did this, this opens the door to this, to X, Y, and Z, and of course, as I said, Lincoln's the gateway drug, and when you start to look at that, you think, well, maybe Lincoln wasn't so good after all. Maybe there's some real problems with Abraham Lincoln, and maybe Lincoln needs to be reevaluated. And you can't say that the second paragraph of the Declaration is anything other, as Jefferson said, than the statement of the American mind in 1776. By saying it's somehow part of a great principle of American government is distorting the entire founding tradition and the founding generation, and is highly problematic for the future of American government. If you want the key attaching the Declaration to American government, it's the last paragraph. And if you really want the key to American government, it's federalism. It's think locally, act locally. It's the idea that the states and the people of the states have the power, and that local government and state government has control over the entire federal structure. It really is the fourth leg of American government. Forget the bureaucracy. It is the state governments. Hope you enjoyed this episode of the Brian McClanahan Show. I'll see you next time.